I worked last night, so I might have a little bit of like night shift brain fog going on.
I totally understand. My husband just said, "Oh, good luck on your podcast." I'm like, "I just got out of bed. I barely got out of the shower in time for this to happen."
Well, then this is the perfect podcast because we're kind of just flying by the seat of our pants here. Welcome to Medroom Chronicles. Join nurses and other care providers as they let you in on discussions usually reserved for the privacy of the locked medication room. In this weekly nursing podcast, the filters come off and we tell it like it is. Your hosts, nurses Adrienne Benning and Andrew Craig, are here to educate and entertain on all things in the nursing world. This podcast is intended for nursing students, nurses, nursing assistants, and other care providers. Non-medical folk will probably get a kick out of us too. If you like what you hear, subscribe and share. Happy nursing, folks. Welcome to Medroom Chronicles. I am your host, Adrienne Benning, and I'm actually here today with a really special episode of Medroom Chronicles. It's a little bit of a different episode today because I am going to be speaking with a wonderful nurse and author who I just met officially for the first time about 5 minutes ago. And by met officially, I mean connected with via the internet. So I would like to introduce to you all nurse and writer Ashley Hay.
How are you? I'm so excited to do this.
Me too. I'm glad you're here. For those that are listening, I kind of explained before we started recording that I worked last night and boy, was it a doozy. So I'm going to try to keep the night shift delirium to a minimum. But I'm really actually excited you're here. We've been trying to have this conversation for a while, and now it's actually happening. I think it's just kind of a testament to the fact that when nurses want to get together, it takes a profound mathematical equation to figure out what time you both are available at the same time. So welcome.
Thank you.
Would you like to maybe just start off with, I don't want you to just give the generic, I don't want to say generic because I don't think you're generic, but I don't want the resume. I want the mom brag list. So if your mom were talking to me right now, what are all the things she would brag about? So yes, you're a nurse. Yes, you're a writer, but tell us, who really is Ashley Hay?
All right. Well, let's see if I can live up to that. Well, I have been a oncology nurse for 12 years. I started at a really great hospital out in New York. And funny enough, it was actually the same cancer center that treated my father for osteosarcoma back in the 80s. And he is still with us. So I was very inspired to get into oncology from a pretty young age, and realized that nursing was kind of, you know, going to be my bag. So I went for that and I absolutely loved working there. That was pretty great. And I got a lot of really cool experience working nights, you know, for 3 years. That for sure will teach you some great code management and how to be the MacGyver of nursing when you don't have enough supplies or what you need exactly. Yeah, I really kind of got my sea legs there. And I think, you know, I've written about this on a couple different articles. I bore pretty easily, so I like to really kind of change up clinically where I was working. So I frequently throughout my career have kind of bounced back and forth between adult and pediatric care, inpatient, outpatient, kind of all different settings. So that was where I started. And then the grind of kind of life in New York City. My husband and I had just gotten married and we were just kind of in the mood for a change, a little sun. So we moved across the country to San Diego, started working out here at an outpatient adult oncology center, did a little clinical research. That was kind of neat, getting to see, you know, the pharma aspect and really like how these patients and their families kind of navigate the healthcare system when they're on a research protocol. That was cool. And then again, back to pediatrics at a different hospital. And more recently, I've kind of been focusing more on case management. And then about 8 months ago, I started writing. So now I am a freelance healthcare content writer and really enjoying that. It really kind of came out of necessity more than desire in the beginning because of some chronic health issues, you know, taking care of others at the bedside. We all know how demanding it can be. And when you don't feel well yourself, it can be incredibly difficult. So just through a couple of searches, I decided that
being a writer was of interest to me, and that's what I've really been kind of pursuing for the last 8 months.
That's wonderful. I think it's fantastic that you've had all of these experiences. And for those that are listening that might not be in the medical field, they might think, well, that sounds like somebody who can't make up their mind. But really, in nursing, it's all connected. So you pick up, I imagine you pick up these skill sets working in one area that maybe don't seem obvious at first, that totally apply to other areas. So it's not that, you know, I want to justify this in a really great way to people who maybe aren't familiar with the profession, because it is true. You literally can do just about anything, and the opportunities that become so important to you might not even exist yet. Like, that was something someone said to me once, like, your nursing job 10, 20 years from now might not even exist yet. And so I think it's really exciting that, you know, I know you said you bore easily, but I think the alternative way to look at that is you love new things. Is that safe to say? Like, you like the adventure of it?
Yeah, I really...
Living in New York City is an adventure in itself. Like,
yeah, I guess it's kind of a bit of a strange quality, but I really enjoy navigating something that I have no idea how to do. You know, I like just trying something different and really not understanding it at first, and then kind of hopefully mastering it by the end. But, you know, to what you were saying earlier, that's really my favorite part of nursing. I love the versatility and the freedom that being in healthcare can provide, you know, and like you said, I was able to just get so much different experience. I mean, you name it, and I've kind of done it in oncology. And I feel like that really helped serve me even for my writing now, because I just have this vast amount of clinical experience that I can speak to and hopefully either teach other nurses or healthcare professionals, or, you know, speak to something that at least interests them.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because I was thinking about this actually before our phone call. I was thinking, oh, oncology, I'm so glad there are nurses that can do that, because I could never do that. And so I was kind of thinking about, well, what is it about that? And as I started trying to come up with stupid little reasons why I feel like that could never be something that I could do, I started thinking, well, these are kind of things I do already. You know, I thought, well, oh, this is really heavy stuff, but I take care of people that are at the end of their lives, quite literally. Like, and so I have both this admiration for you and also this like kind of like scared awe as well, because that's how I feel about oncology nurses in general. And then even more so, I'm a relatively new nurse. I've been a nurse for like, what, 17 or 18 months now. Nursing assistant for like 11 or 12 years. So I'm not a stranger to the hospital. I'm not totally green in that respect. But thinking about oncology and kind of everything that's wrapped up in that, because it's not just the treatment, you know, much like anything else in nursing, it's about new technology, new therapies, in addition with kind of like the evidence-based ways of taking care of people.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny, being in oncology, I hear that a lot, mostly, you know, from other nurses saying, oh God, I could never do that. But I think it's really all relative, because there are many fields where I feel the same way. For example, labor and delivery is one of them for me. And I think, you know, I don't know, during my clinical rotations, it just was not for me. I just couldn't handle it. When it was happy, it was fine for me, you know, it just didn't quite translate. And then when it was sad, it was really sad. And I, for example, those are nurses that I think, oh, you guys are angels. I could not do that field. So it's really, that's kind of another reason why, again, nursing is just so incredible, because it's one profession that just has so many different avenues to go down. And even if you're just choosing the clinical aspect, you know, within even one specialty, there's still so many areas to work within. So
absolutely. It's been cool. And so I do want to segue into talking about the thing that I'm like kind of like super excited about. And that is, so kind of in the theme of like, you know, being able to do all these different things and learning new skills all the time. Proton therapy is something that you have done. And it was literally something I'd never heard of before I heard you mention it. And so that is something that I'm kind of like, even though I understand that there are a lot of things that I do that are pretty technically complicated, I
listened to that. I watched a couple of YouTube videos about it and I was like crazy. So I would like you, if you would, give us like the just the super brief proton therapy for dummies, for those of us both in and out of the profession that are like, huh?
Yeah.
What?
That's pretty much how I was too. When they asked me to go and work at that center, I kind of got into it on a whim, really. They were a little bit short-staffed and kind of needed somebody with some sedation recovery experience. And working in the pediatric oncology clinic, I was doing just that after kind of some small procedures, you know, lumbar punctures, bone marrow aspirates, things like that. So for the Proton Center, I went up for my first, you know, orientation shift, and it was just the coolest thing, walking into what they call the gantry, which is the big treatment room. It's just, it's incredible to see. And then you're surrounded by literally, I mean, scientists, radiation therapists, an anesthesiologist, and it just felt very like big sci-fi. And I'm already kind of a science nerd, so yeah, I was fascinated.
That's what I was going to say, because the video that I watched, I watched, it was kind of an animation, you know, kind of a very realistic animation. And what I saw from kind of like the outsider's perspective of having no idea kind of what you're describing, you walked in. I might sound really dumb here. So there's a table, there's some apparatus, and then like the walls around, like it's kind of like I'm doing a terrible job even attempting to explain what I saw. It is. It's very much like, it looked like a spaceship to me.
Yeah, and that's exactly kind of what it feels like when you're in there too. But it's funny because, you know, it feels very big science, but for the nurses part, it really is kind of, I mean, if you're going to boil it down to basics, you know, just about the patient and their airway. I mean, that's really like my two priorities.
Sure, yeah.
But I have to say, you know, if we had to kind of break it down for what my role is when I'm in there, because it's typically one-to-one. So it will, you know, we'll have the child in there who is sedated and does have a an LMA in, just to kind of keep their airway open. Mm-hmm. And then I work side by side with the anesthesiologist, and then the radiation therapists are in the room as well. And if the beam ever breaks, which that has happened, the scientists are readily available on the phone and about two rooms over. So when we start, I think the sedation setup and just monitoring is really kind of the basics of what we're looking at.
Sure.
So, you know, you want to make sure the propofol's running at an accurate rate and that, you know, the patient's airway is open and maintained, all those kind of basic things. But then the tricky part is that little table that you mentioned, they do what we call a kick to the table. So depending on the patient's plan, you know, where they intend to get the radiation, the table moves. So as the radiation therapist is moving the table into the gantry and quite far, you have to, one, make sure that you don't fall in the big hole that's behind the table while still moving all of these pumps. So, you know, you have your IV pump, the sedation pump, and then all of your monitors as well. So you're trying to move that, not hit it into the table, not fall in the hole, make sure your patient's breathing. So it can be.
So it's radiation ballet with like airway maintenance involved, basically, is
right,
what it is.
Right. Yeah. So it can be kind of nerve wracking, but it's pretty fun.
So did you find that as you moved closer to being like more experienced with this, did you find that you had a way of moving that allowed you to just kind of like adapt to it? Like, did you get better at it, I guess is what I'm saying. Did you get better at the ballet? You must have. Yeah.
That's a great way to describe it, especially because there's kind of like this grate system. So that way when the back of your feet hit these big bumps, you don't back up anymore. And like I said, fall into the gantry. Mm-hmm. But it can be particularly difficult on some of the more complicated table kicks because you have to shove, you know, those crazy IV poles with all the feet over all of this grating. So yes, I have perfected it a little bit, but I was quite, I guess, gauche in the beginning. So yeah, it's interesting. And then from there, I would say too, the most important, you know, part that I play is running an effective timeout. I sometimes can be a little bit soft spoken, I guess, in my personal life. I feel like everyone's always saying like, what did you say? Speak up, speak up. But, you know, when you're running a timeout, you have to be assertive and loud and make sure you know exactly what is, you know, to be said and what's coming. So things like, you know, is this safety belt applied? Because if this kid happens to wake up for some reason, we want to make sure that they're not falling off the table. Clarifying the propofol rate so that way, you know, there's no chances of kind of overdosing or any issues with the, you know, breathing, because they are breathing on their own. And, you know, just confirming also the site of the radiation obviously is very important, which the radiation therapists, you know, do their own timeout as well.
Of course.
But yeah, that's another pretty important part that the nurse is responsible for.
Yeah. And I kind of want to extrapolate on that for just a second. I want to give like a little basic definition for our non-healthcare workers and students that are listening. Mm-hmm. A timeout is kind of a universal, or should be, in my opinion, a universal thing that happens before any procedure, operation, anything like that begins. Before you cut, before you radiate, before you do anything like that, you do a timeout. So will you just please give the, I keep saying, will you please give me the brief definition? I'm asking you to define things today. Just real quick, explain to people like the basic of, I know you kind of already did, but a timeout is basically what? I don't work in healthcare and I need my 101 explanation.
Yeah. I think you explained it pretty efficiently. So it's basically just a double check between all of the providers who are in the room. So everybody quite literally puts their hands down and stops doing whatever they're doing to pay attention to the timeout. Off the top of my head, we have a checklist, but I will confirm the patient's full name, date of birth, MRN, site to be radiated, allergies, the rate of the propofol or any other medication that we have also given if needed for the sedation. And like I said, the last piece is that the safety belt has in fact been applied and actually on. Mm-hmm. And then from there, you know, if everyone agrees and the story checks out, then we go ahead and begin the whole process.
It kind of reminds me of, you know, when you're in kindergarten and the teacher puts her finger on her nose and she doesn't continue until every kid in the room has their finger on their nose. You know what I'm talking about? That motion. I'm making very rudimentary comparisons here, but it's kind of like that. Everyone has to look at you. Everyone has to be on the same page so that absolutely no mistakes are made. And, you know, we don't want to make mistakes on any humans, but especially not children. I say that with absolutely no reservation. We don't want to hurt adults either. Old or six or whatever on your table, you really don't want any mistakes for that child.
Right. Yeah, there's like an extra advocacy piece, I think, when dealing with children, because, you know, there is no one else sometimes to look out for them, especially, you know, when we're in procedure rooms and things like that, and the parents have already seen them to sleep. You know, you are their last line of defense. They really can't speak for themselves. And I agree with you, not that we should be protecting children over adults or however, you know, like I said, I've bounced back and forth between adults and peds many times, but there is an extra kind of weight that you feel when taking care of a child.
Mm-hmm. Of course. And that's the thing that makes me just shudder with anxiety thinking about, I love children. That's it. That and oncology. Those are the two things that I'm like, oh, give me my 90-year-old curmudgeonly men that, you know, have whatever going on. That's my target demographic. But the thing that, you know, the other thing that I thought was interesting about proton therapy, because again, I had no information about this prior. And again, correct me if I'm wrong, but proton therapy is done in such a way that it hyper-focuses the radiation on the area that needs it to minimize kind of like the collateral damage of the tissue around it that that happens with kind of the traditional radiation. Would you say that's true or? Yeah.
Yes, that is definitely accurate. So, you know, it's not for every type of tumor. There is a lot of specifics in it that are sometimes even well over my head after working in this area. But yeah, I think that that's a great explanation. I wrote in an article, and I think most people appreciate this. It was taught to me when I started in proton that if you can think of kind of what we know to be regular radiation as a wide spray, you know, like if you have a Windex bottle and you can do it like the precision spray or the wide spray, mm-hmm. that proton therapy is kind of when you put it on that direct stream. So it's just kind of, it's a narrower delivery system. And there's, like I said, a lot of specifics, but the point is that it releases the biggest energy release inside the tumor, you know, when it gets there. So it is a bit difficult to describe, but I would definitely encourage anybody who's interested, you know, like you said, get on YouTube, read a couple articles about it. Like I said, I mean, I've done it and I still am in awe and a bit confused. And I ask a ton of questions because it is really fascinating, the stuff that's, you know, coming out in medicine.
It is. So yes. And I encourage people, there's some great animations. The gantry, y'all got to go see it. You got to go check out the photos and videos that are available. But because it truly is humbling to think, wow, actually something that I could do? Really? Mm-hmm. It's just, it kind of blows my mind. So that's really cool that you've done that. That's, you know, just another example of how, like you said, you're like, well, I don't know how to do this. I might be a little fumbly at first, but I'm going to walk away from this feeling like, you know, not only have you kind of mastered the skill set, but that you've also, obviously in the process, you've made an impact in people's lives, you know, which is what we all, I think, strive for as nurses. Like, we don't do it for the fame and the glory. We do it because we want to affect actual change for people. So,
right. And, you know, seeing these families every day, sometimes for, you know, almost a month straight, because the proton therapy they're usually getting for about, I don't know, 28 to 30 something days. So they're there every morning, you know, Monday through Friday. And a lot of the patients that I've treated are out of state, sometimes out of the country. You know, it's important to assess their dynamic as well, because some of these families, you know, they have other children and they've kind of uprooted their whole life to come and stay in a hotel room and, you know, get their child radiation 5 days a week. And they're looking for somebody to talk to, as well as take care of their child. So
absolutely. Wow. Such an important role. I mean, I would love to spend like 25 minutes talking about every single job you've ever had, because I really, as a new nurse and as someone who's just kind of like geeky and nerdy with medical stuff anyway, even before I became a nurse, this stuff is just like right up my alley. If we had unlimited time, I think that this could probably go on for a long time. I do want to kind of switch gears a little bit and talk about kind of the step you've made away from the bedside, because not only are you a scientist, but you're an artist of sorts as well, which I think those two are so critical. I identify the same way. I'm very much like, at work, I'm type A, I'm science minded. I like to assess, diagnose, treat, assess again, you know. And then at home, I'm kind of like poetry and like paint something. Your art, so to speak, which I very much think writing is an art, not everyone can do. You made the plunge. You said like part of necessity and part, you know, this is kind of what you want to do, and you tried all sorts of other stuff, so why not try this?
Yeah, I mean, thanks for all of those kind words. But yeah,
I think you're kind of cool. Like, I'm sorry, I'm kind of fangirling over you a little bit. Like, you're just going to have to like handle that for a little while longer.
Feelings mutual. Yeah, I you know, kind of what I was talking about a little bit before. I mean, I had struggled with chronic illness and bedside nursing my entire career. And just as things kind of progressed for me, it got a little bit harder and harder every year to kind of, you know, maintain the 40 hours. Okay, I'll do something a little less physical. And then when that became an issue, you know, okay, I'll decrease my hours and maybe go per diem. So I kept trying to work around it, because I do, you know, I love bedside care so much, and I love oncology patients, and I'm good at taking care of them. You know, we're a very important piece of these patients' lives, and I don't take that lightly. Being, you know, a patient in another facet, you know, myself, I really understand the importance of the nurse's role, kind of, you know, having been on both sides of the bed rails, I guess. But at some point, you know, I just kind of was getting a little bit fed up and was realizing that I wasn't doing my part for self-care. it was becoming just so difficult for me to go to work. And I realized I wasn't enjoying my work because I really was not feeling well. And I think your patients can tell. You know, I've had nurses where it's just pretty obvious to me that they're not having a great day. So I did just a ton of Google searching, kept coming up with all of these things that just really had no interest. I had no interest in, you know, management, kind of cool things like forensics. There's so much out there. If you Google non-clinical bedside roles, there's a ton, but it wasn't for me. And I kind of came across this very small article by a now fellow nurse writer, and just talking about becoming a healthcare writer. And it just kind of gave me the confidence to try it. So I just, you know, I hadn't written anything, to be honest, since I had left college, which was a number of years ago at this point. So to see if I even could write something that people would want to read, I really just kind of drafted up a quick little article. I think it was called A Nurse's Sacrifice. And it was just kind of talking about all of the things that we as nurses do kind of sacrifice to be good in our jobs, be available for, you know, sometimes non-desirable shifts, holidays, weekends, nights, time away from our families, things like that. And I had submitted it to two different websites, didn't hear back for about 3 weeks, fast forward, and allnurses.com, they were the first ones to ever pick me up. So I'm always very grateful to them for taking me on without any experience at all.
I love that site. I love it so much.
Me too. And they've just been so supportive. The two women that I work with that run the site, you know, it's great to kind of have mentors in your corner that really want you to do well. But that was really how I kind of started. And then from there, it's really just exploded. But I get a ton of really great feedback and a lot of exposure through my articles for All Nurses. So I'm very grateful to them.
That's wonderful. You know, I actually didn't know about All Nurses for like probably the first 6 or 8 months of my nursing career. And then when I discovered it, I was like, oh man, I just fell down a wormhole that I'm never going to get out of. Like I got a subscription to the site, so I'm like a pro member now, and I just, it's like my new Facebook almost. Like it's the thing that, like, if I'm just like chilling on the couch, you know, with like the TV playing in the background, I'm on All Nurses. I don't post very much because I'm kind of about it, but I love reading things, even if there's someone that I don't agree with that's posting. I'm like, hey, that's one more perspective, you know. Mm-hmm. I get to see one more person's paradigm. So yeah, I think it's fantastic. I think everyone that's listening should go to allnurses.com and just kind of cruise around, take a look. And then they can look for I assume that they can search for you by name and find, I'm certain of it because I think I did that as part of my cyber research, my cyber stalking.
Yeah, I think there's a search box and you could probably just type my name and my All Nurses kind of blog will come up with all the articles I've written for them. Or you can always find everything on my website too. It's Ahay Writing. That's ahaywriting.com. And then from there, you can check out my Instagram and, you know, my portfolio and all that kind of stuff. And I love hearing from nursing students and other kind of novice writers. It's kind of mind-blowing to me that I am now somehow in a place where I'm getting questions and emails from, you know, people who are thinking of starting a blog or thinking of trying to start writing and have questions on how to do that. And I feel really fortunate that I am somehow now in a place where I'm the one answering the questions instead of constantly asking them every day.
It's always a good feeling. The first time someone came up to me and asked me a question that I was able to answer, I practically wanted to go around the unit and like have people high five me because I was like, yeah, I know something now. So I totally understand how that feels. Maybe not in the same way, but that sense of validation is really, and it's great, especially when you're kind of like, well, you know, I need something that is nicer to me and my body and something that I actually enjoy. And so to find something like this and then to have it work, That's the beautiful thing, is that you're not just you know, treading water. And I think that for a lot of nurses, including myself, that's the fear. And I was actually, as you were saying, you know, you love talking to people and starting blogs and giving advice, and that's great. And I was like, I'm already formulating an email in my head. I blog a little bit, you know, kind of as my private self and not as like the Medroom Chronicles personality I've become over the last couple months. But yeah, it's kind of like that kind of slows me down. It's actually twofold. It's one, and I want you to speak to both of these things. One is, how do I choose what to write about? There's 1,005,000 things at any given moment that's in my head. And, you know, how do I zero in on that? And also, how do I, threefold question, you know, so like, how do I then make myself feel like I actually know what I'm talking about and people want to listen to what I have to say? Like, how do you stretch that muscle? Was that hard for you at all at first? Were you like, yeah, I really like this article, but I have some insecurity? Like, were you ever there?
For sure. For sure. I mean, the...
Thought you were going to drop an F-bomb there for a second.
No.
We've both been very good this far. Okay.
Well, now that you said it, I'm sure one of us is going to slip any day now. But yeah, so just going back to the first question that you had about, you know, I have so many ideas in my head and how do I zero in on it? For me, my creative process is very much the same way. I mean, sometimes I'm not kidding. I will wake up at like 2 a.m. and I think, oh, I had a dream about this, or I'm thinking about work. I should write about that. I'm very much a list maker, but I have a constant running list in, you know, my little home office here, where I just keep an idea list, really, and a content folder. I think that that's important. Just kind of, you know, have something on your computer where you can just jot down all of your ideas, because then you can always go back to them. And each idea that you have, you really can expand an entire article or a blog post on. But if you don't keep writing them down and keep track of them, you know, I mean, nursing is just such a wide profession filled with all of these topics. So it's great. You know, if you have these ideas, just keep track of them. And then you can always go back and kind of expand out. I have a couple different ways that I usually kind of hone in on my articles. You can look up plenty of ideas, I'm sure. But I've even been known to, do you remember in grade school where you would write like a topic in the middle of a circle and then you would expand like the circle down?
Yeah, the web. Yeah, the big...
Yeah.
Basic webbing they teach you, thought mapping or whatever.
Yep. So like that, outlines. Sometimes, you know, I also just start writing and it's really bad for the first couple sentences and then you kind of get your flow. But, you know, there's a ton of different ways around it. So I would say for anyone who's interested in blogging or writing, really just start a content folder and a little list of things that you're interested in, and then just go back and revisit it and kind of expand out from there. And talking about confidence in writing, yes, that was a major, major issue for me in the beginning, because like you said earlier, you know, on the unit, I felt really confident. I mean, I was this experienced nurse with a pretty vast background, and it's a good feeling to, you know, be one of the seasoned nurses on the unit that people are coming to for advice or questions. But in the writing arena, I was super green. So, and it was really funny because in the beginning on All Nurses, I mean, I was like obsessively checking how many views I got, what the comments were, and if there was any comment that at all, you know, they didn't agree with my post or they were questioning it, or some were frankly a little bit mean. It was like, it was just so crushing. But I think like with anything, you know, your confidence and your skill set kind of comes with time. I still, you know, deep down, I'm a little bit sensitive anyway. So I think, you know, if somebody isn't nice to you, it will never feel good. But I have to say, the followers and the readers that I have had over the last, you know, 8 months, once they kind of kept seeing my name, I have a great following, and the readers have always given really great feedback. But, you know, one of my mentors for writing told me this, and she said, I don't know when you're going to learn. You have to just kind of fake it till you make it. And I thought, that is pretty true. I mean, in a lot of areas of nursing, you know, when you go to do your first IV, you hopefully don't go up with shaking hands and say, this is my very first IV. You know, you have to kind of have this sense mm-hmm. of confidence and project it to the patient so that way they feel comfortable. And then when it's all said and done, you know, everybody moves on with a with a little bit more yes. confidence behind them.
But that's true. Like I've said to people, you know, in all arenas, like whether my boyfriend is playing guitar and misses a note, or a nursing student like forgets a minor inconsequential step, mm-hmm. I say to them, as long as you're not doing something major, like breaking sterile field, like just, they're going to be okay. Like, mm-hmm. and if it's an emergency, you're not going to be alone in a vacuum. So you have to kind of be like, well, I ever gave an enema. It was one of those things where I was like, I know how to do this, but walking into a human being and doing that is a very different, doing and saying are two different things. And so while I do not at all mean to say that writing is like an enema, it's just kind of like what you're saying. Well, you're only going to do it the first time once. And then after that, you're going to at least have that little bit of experience behind you. So were you always a writer growing up? Was that just something that you were super into, or?
I mean, I always had a huge love for reading ever since I was a kid, and still as an adult. I mean, that's a little bit of an obsession in our house. I feel like I'm just constantly looking at bigger bookshelves because I am just bringing books home all the time. But yeah, so I loved reading and writing as a kid, and I felt like I was decent at it, but it was just never really something that was cultivated or really fostered. And then, you know, when you go into nursing school, it's much more kind of science heavy, which I also mm-hmm. really enjoy. So it is funny though, because I have realized over the last 6 months or so that I do have a very creative side. I know you were talking about like painting earlier, and I've kind of started dabbling in more creative realms like that, drawing and writing a lot of lyrics, submitting like short stories and poetry for writing competitions. And it's funny, kind of once you open up your creativity valve, you know, stuff just kind of organically flows out. So that's a new side of myself that I've just gotten to know recently.
That's pretty fantastic, I think, that you've reached a point where you're like, well, I'm just going to turn on the faucet and we're going to pump out some, because it's true. I think most nurses, even ones that don't have aspirations of necessarily writing or broadcasting or whatever, you could just walk into a room and do word association and just say like a key phrase. And every nurse in that room is going to be like, oh, I got something to say about that. Oh boy, do I have something to say about that. One of my friends that I interviewed on a previous episode, she said that one of the things that she loves about nurses is that not only are they super aware of, like, you know, they're like the boots on the ground. They know what's happening for their patients. They know what's happening in the industry. And they're not shy about speaking up and saying, you know, this is wrong and we need to change our culture, or this is great and we need, you know, like evidence-based practice is basically us just being like, okay, we're on the right track. Yes, yes, this is good. Evidence says we're doing the right thing. And so I think that translates into writing. You know, you're like putting out this information and people are like, I like what you're saying, that I've felt that too. And I think that kind of unifies us, whether you're, you know, an oncology nurse on the West Coast or a pulmonary nurse in Iowa or, you know, sports medicine in the South, whatever you're doing, I feel like you have that ability to at least something that you can, like you said, you can take just like one little idea that you have at 2 a.m. and before you know it, it's like this lengthy post that you're really proud of that, you know, says something that maybe you didn't even realize you were trying to say when you started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's interesting too, because I owe so much of my writing success to a lot of mentors that I found really all through connecting, you know, on the internet, through like LinkedIn. I'm part of this great community called the Healthcare Writers Network. And I think it does a couple things. One, it proved to me that nurses don't always eat their young, because that helped me, you know, take these ideas that I get at 2 a.m. and think, all right, you know, I'll look at this in the morning. And when you relook at it, you think, yep, this is going to work. And I just feel like whatever area you're in nursing, you know, from clinical to writing to whatever it may be, it is just so important to kind of find your tribe and find those people who are going to support you and lift you up and make you confident in your ability. In any area of nursing, it's so key to find those people who make you feel that way.
And they do exist. I'm hanging on those words that you said. Like, it's really nice to know what it's like when nurses don't eat their young. And we don't all. I think the culture is shifting. And, you know, there's always going to be some a-holes in the industry that just don't, like, they just can't see the bigger, better picture. But I think that's so awesome. And in addition to all nurses, LinkedIn, which I signed up for LinkedIn like years ago and was like, I don't know what the hell I'm going to do with this. Like, and now it turns out, you know, people are, they're sharing articles, they're sharing blog posts, they're sharing information, they're linking up with other people. And so I think that's awesome that you've found kind of like this, you know, group of people that can be like, hey, you're kind of like us. Mm-hmm. Like, come on over and, you know, maybe we can help each other out.
Yeah. No, the inclusiveness, you know, I mean, it feels good in any setting. But yeah, I'm just, like I said, you know, I'm really grateful that I kind of found those people. Not to say, you know, in my clinical experience, I didn't have that either. I had both exceptionally wonderful preceptors and I also had exceptionally awful preceptors. So It was, you know, but it's great because I really did learn from both of them. From the bad ones, I learned how I did not want to teach my nursing students and my new nurses when I was the one doing the training and kind of what didn't feel good for me. But, you know, from the great ones too, then, I mean, there's so many tips clinically that you can pick up from a great preceptor and even just life experience in general. I mean, I've learned some really kind of cool things from all of my preceptors and mentors kind of across the board.
Yeah. God, that's so valuable. The collective knowledge of nurses as like, if you think about, you know, nurses as a long, long line of, you know, there's, I'm going to make a sci-fi reference here. Forgive me, everybody who's not into sci-fi, but you know, the Dune series. I don't know. A lot of people do. I can't think of the author. Anyway, the point that I'm trying to make, gosh, if I can just get to it, my brain fog is setting in pretty heavy now. But in this kind of like setting, they're kind of like witches, but they're called the Bene Gesserit. And I'm, sci-fi fans are probably groaning at my horrible description, but basically they have like a collective memory. They have the memories of their mothers, mothers, mothers. And while we don't literally have that in nursing, you know, we're not all witches. But I think there is this kind of collective memory that occurs. And, you know, it happens through, like you're talking about, the preceptors that you have, both their clinical expertise and just their life experience. For new nurses that have worked with you that can say the same about you because you've had both personal and professional opinions, I'm sure, to give. But I think it's so important that we remember that. And I've said this before, because my friend Allison, she's pre-nursing. She's not in nursing school yet. And she was like, well, I don't really think I'm qualified to talk about this. And it's like, you have something to bring to the table at every step of the game. And so I think that handing down of knowledge and the sharing of expertise is so critical in our profession. See outside of like trades, you know, like people learn to make things and have a skill or a craft. And I think nursing, while it's a very like education, like very educationally focused, like formal education, I also think that there's kind of an art to it. You know, when you work with that nurse who, you know, she may only have her LPN, but she's been doing it for 40 years and she knows, you know, 100 times as much as someone like me, who's been in the game for a lot less. So I'm rambling, but I guess the point that I'm making is that, you know, these communities and this collective knowledge that we're spreading is like pretty critical. And I think you've become of that collective knowledge through like your writing and, you know, even this podcast and, you know, others you've done, which I don't think I've mentioned it yet. Sorry, I'm on a rant here. You also were on the Your Next Shift podcast.
I was, yeah. That was actually the first podcast that I did. And my writing business was pretty fresh still. I mean, I was, you know, I had a couple of clients. Elizabeth Scala, who hosts the podcast, her and I connected through LinkedIn. If you're not on LinkedIn, I definitely recommend it for sure. You can just connect with so many great people who have a lot to offer you. And I don't even think, you know, you realize it until you're on it. But her and I really just kind of hit it off through email, back and forth. And she asked if I wanted to be a guest. And, you know, despite my nervous sweating for about an hour before we taped the first podcast, I loved it. And I thought it was so much fun. And that's why, you know, getting another chance to do it with you. I think it's really cool that nurses are branching out into all of these aspects of social media. I think it's important, you know, being a newer nurse or a seasoned nurse, it's just important for all of us to have somewhere to go, to kind of listen to each other's experiences and like you said, feelings like, oh, hey, that's happened to her. That's happened to me. You know, oh, he's talking about this. She's talking about this. And, I also like that it can be a little bit more relaxed. Like we were talking about for this podcast, you know, nursing can sometimes be just so serious, and rightfully so, but it can also kind of weigh on us as well. And I think just having a, you know, more relaxed conversation about nursing, that it's definitely time for something like that. So I'm a huge fan of all the nursing podcasts. I think it's really awesome.
You're an avid reader. To that kind of similar note, I am a podcast like personality. I have so many, I don't even want to pull it up and start reading because it'll take forever. But I have a number of nursing podcasts that I live for every week. And there have been so many times that I'll be at work and someone will be talking about something that, like, they're like, I've never heard of that. What is that? And I'll be like, oh my God, I just heard that on a podcast like 3 days ago. And then I pull some like random data out of my pocket about this thing. And people are like, how the hell did she know that? That's awesome. How do you know that? And I'm like, you got to get on the podcast train, man. Like, really? There's so many people sharing so much good information. I wanted to do this. I'm like, there's so many topics, so many people. This could literally be a never-ending cycle of these fantastic discussions like we're having now. So I do want to... you know, we're kind of approaching, or I don't even know, I think we're maybe getting close or maybe over an hour now, but I want to kind of tackle one last topic. I know we had a few left, but I really want to talk about self-care, because we've talked about that throughout kind of all of these topics, all of these things that we've talked about. Had a very clear indicator that you needed to change what you were doing for your body, and it sounds like you're better off for it. But I think you have some valuable things that you could give to our listeners, our students, our new nurses, or even seasoned nurses that maybe just aren't very good at self-care. You know, maybe we don't prioritize it. So talk to us a little bit about, relax it a little bit. So talk about like what your self-care entails. It's different for everybody, but like what things are like your perfect, you know, survival kit of self-care as a nurse, whether it be bedside, clinical, research, whatever. What do you do? What do you do, Ashley?
Yeah, it's funny. This is definitely one of my favorite topics. I can't say that I'm still great at it. I don't know that any of us ever are. But I see the value of it so much more so now in recent years than I did, especially as a newer nurse. It's so tempting, right? Because we all go into nursing, obviously, hopefully, wanting to help people. And, you know, you have all these patients and you know, there's always something to be done. So it's really tempting to say, I don't have time to go use the restroom. I don't have time to drink water. I don't have time to take a lunch break. But as I,
you know, kept going in the profession, I kept realizing I was not only doing myself a huge disservice, but I really was also doing a disservice for my patients and the rest of my peers too. You know, you're a little cranky because you're kind of hangry. You know, you're kind of rushing your patient, you know, because you're trying to see if you could fit in a break because you haven't gotten one yet, and now it's 3 o'clock and you're exhausted. So I think clinically, stuff like that, you know, just being mindful that taking 5 or 10 minutes is really kind of a small piece for the day. And if you're not available for 5 minutes, it's not as much time as you think. So take care of yourself. But for me, some of the favorite kind of self-care techniques I've recently kind of been working with, I have been doing a daily guided meditation. It's only for 5 or 10 minutes. I know some of you are like shuddering right now, like, oh God, I can't sit still for that long, or what do I do? And I felt the same way. It was very difficult in the beginning. And God knows, if I had to guide myself through a meditation, I would probably just pull my hair out. but there's, like, just for an example, there's a new app that came out. I really love it, actually. It's called Simple Habit, and it's a free download. And they just have all these kind of really cool, different guided meditations, depending on what you're doing for the day. So, you know, it could be morning meditation, like with your coffee, or it could be that, you know, I had the worst day ever and I feel like I'm going to have a nervous breakdown, so I'm going to take 10 minutes away from my family, you know, and just, and take that time to myself. And I do find that just taking the time to, like, slow down your nervous system, take some deep breaths, even if, you know, you don't find yourself in, like, this great meditative state, it does really help, like, set you up for the remainder of your day. So that's one thing that's worked for me. I used to be a pretty big yoga junkie after I came out to California in the beginning. But, you know, again, just having to constantly assess what feels good for your body. You know, there came a point, again, with kind of flare-ups and chronic illness, that I was going to yoga maybe 3-4 times a week. And then now I'm not sure that I could even get through an hour class, and that's okay. You know, I think being a little bit easier on yourself and saying, maybe I can't do this right now, but I can do, you know, for example, some meditation or some painting, to calm me down. So stuff like that, not to rub it in, you know, but I do live in Southern California. So,
oh my God, it was 16 degrees when I came out of the hospital this morning. I don't want to hear about it.
I was just going to say, so I do love the beach time. However, I realize this is airing in probably, you know, January or December, and everyone now hates me. So, but listen, I put my time in, you know. I mean, I lived in the East Coast with snow up to my ears many a winter. And yeah, it is not for me. So, but other than that, you know, for self-care, I know that we talked a little bit about it, but really setting aside some creative time to do whatever it is that you get enjoyment from. It doesn't have to be, you know, creating these masterpiece paintings or anything, which God knows I'm certainly not doing. but, you know, whatever it might be, like doodling, or like taking a little, you know, those wine and paint classes, or, you know, really just anything. I think it's really important to just kind of have an outlet. You know, some people like the gym, some people, you know, want to create some pottery, whatever it is, just do what makes you feel good, and make sure that you find, even if it's 10 minutes, you know, just find some time for you. As nurses, we're constantly caring for others. And I think it's just so important that we really do take care of ourselves.
The quote that kind of sticks with me, and that I say to coworkers, is you cannot pour from an empty cup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I had someone say to me too, something like, you can be a lot of things to a lot of people, but you cannot be everything to everyone.
True.
And I think it is true, but we have, as nurses, that sometimes, you know, that desire to just do it all and do it well and be there for everyone. And then, you know, on top of that, you have family life and everything else. It can be
very overwhelming if you don't kind of stay ahead of it and make sure that, you know, you're filling up the tank or filling up your cup.
So. Right. And students and young nurses need to make sure that they are hitting the ground running with these tactics, because as a new nurse, I felt like everything had a scheduled time of right now or 5 minutes ago. And one of the most valuable lessons that I learned as a new nurse was, yes, of course, if your patient is coding, that can't wait, or, you know, things of the like. But, oh, your patient needs an ice pack. Yes, you will get it for them. But you know what? If you've got to pee, go pee. Never miss an opportunity to pee. And it's actually, it was funny and also not. I was shopping with some friends, doing some Christmas shopping just this weekend. And I've been out. It's like a little tiny town that's like 30 miles west of the city I live in. Really lovely place. But so we drove out there and I was like, man, I kind of got to pee. I'll just pee when we get there. And then we went to a couple shops and I was like, well, it's pretty crowded in here. I'll just pee when we get to a few more shops. And then by the time I actually made it to a bathroom, I was like 3.5 hours. And like, it didn't even occur, like, you know, there, I actually turned to my friend who's also a nurse and I said, it's bad when you have to pee for so long that suddenly you realize you don't have the sensation to pee anymore. Like, that's when you're like, I'm probably not doing myself a favor here. So, but it just, we get so used to pushing ourselves that it almost becomes the active thing that requires our attention is remembering to do those basic daily, do your ADLs, folks. Like, you know, yeah, your patient, yes, they might need their Xanax or, you know, whatever they need, but also like sneak into a closet for 5 minutes, stretch out your neck, stretch out your arms, hit the ground running again.
I was going to say, you know, speaking of self-care and the bathroom topic, crying in the bathroom does not count as self-care for 10 minutes, although I'm sure I would have been considered an expert my first couple of years.
Me
of
too. Nursing.
That is totally normal. I think a lot of young nurses need to know, like, it's totally fine. I have cried in a med room and in a bathroom probably many times over the years.
Oh, man.
It's good to let it out. However, don't count that as your self-care.
No, not at all. I had some very public panic attacks early on in my nursing career, and I didn't realize they were panic attacks until much after the fact. Because, you know, I remember the first one I had, I was still working with my preceptor who, first of all, she's amazing. And I don't say she intimidates me, but she's someone I really respected and still do respect. So that might have made me feel a little terrified. But I was taking care of a lung transplant patient who had just come out of the ICU. I, all day long, felt like I was inches away from peeing my pants out of fright. And now it's like those patients, you know, 18 months later, even though I still, you know, I'm not like perfectly, I have learned to control it a little bit. I'll never forget the day I had a very kind of visible panic attack on day shift on the unit, was crying, was very upset, was shaking, and went back. My nurse was great. She took me back to the physician's on-call room and she said, you know, just sit in here and chart and come out when you're ready, dry your eyes, get yourself together. So I texted my friend who became a nurse maybe a year before I did. And I texted her and I said, why do I always end up crying in this on-call room? Tell me I'm going to be okay. And she, if you knew her, you'd laugh at this. She texted back, you're fine, period. Clean your face, period. Go back to work, period. And that was all she had to say. And coming from her, I was like, oh, yeah. Yep. I am okay, aren't I? Yep. This is okay. I got scared. I'm good now. And I think we all have to have those check-in moments. Even if we don't have that person to text, we need to have that own voice that we build in our head that says, yep, this sucks. Yep. Mm-hmm, sure does. And you know what? You're going to get through it and it's going to be okay. I think
it is so true.
Yeah. Yeah, and we all come into that in our own time, some much sooner than others. But I think what you've been saying this whole time is vital. Like, you need to figure out what works best for you, and you need to actually do it. And that's the hard part. I know I feel better when I go to the gym. Same way with yoga. It's like after I do yoga, I'm like, man, I feel like I can move properly again. Yet still, there are days when I don't do yoga. And it's like, what? I'd rather lay here and feel like crap rather than, you know, get off my butt and do 10 minutes of stretching.
Although, hey, you know, self-care too also sometimes includes like a Netflix marathon and your favorite pajamas. Yeah. I'm all for that also.
but not on every single day off. This semester, you know, I just finished my semester. So like I'm literally talking to you in my PJ bottoms and I've got these slippers on that I bought at the outlet mall the other day. They're ridiculous. They look like bunnies. I am a 36-year-old woman in conversation with someone I respect and I'm wearing bunny slippers. So
don't worry, I have slippers on too, truth be told. But I did put jeans on today to work from home. Woo! So I would like a little bit of credit for that.
Girl, you get all the credit for that. Jeans, I'm like, my boyfriend and I drove to St. Louis last weekend and I wore my favorite scrub pants in the car. Because there's just not anything in the world more comfortable that I can also get away with wearing in public. Well, Ashley, I think this is a good place for us to kind of wrap it up. We're at about a little over an hour. I really could probably talk to you for several more hours, but my delirium is just going to increase. And I'm sure that you have some really awesome things that you've got in your hopper to work on. So,
yeah.
And, you know, I would love to have you back in the future. I think there's about 150 topics that I could easily talk about with you again. But what I'd like you to do as we kind of close this out, I want you to just one more time recap for folks where they can find you, where they can find your work, and anything else you want them to know before we say goodbye.
Alrighty. Well, you can follow me on my website. That's ahaywriting, ahaywriting.com. From there, you can kind of check out my portfolio. If you clicked the contact tab, you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, stuff like that. You can always find me on All Nurses. I generally do somewhere between 2 and 4 posts for them a month. And I guess if I had to say anything, it would just be take care of yourselves.
Absolutely. Gosh, there couldn't be a truer theme to this show. In all things, make sure you're doing what serves your patients, but also keeps you in good shape. Because to be a good nurse, you have to be good to yourself. So I have really enjoyed talking to you. I'm kind of sad that it's over. This has been like, you know, almost 2 months in the making. I looked at the first email and it was, I think the date that I had written on the little set of notes that I'd written was like November 4th or something like that. And it is now December, what day is it? 12th.
So typical though with nurses, right?
But the point is we always get it done. All right. Well, everyone, thank you for listening to another fantastic, I say fantastic, not because of me, but because of you. Another fantastic episode of MedRoom Chronicles. You can go to medroomchronicles.com and you can find our episodes. And also, I just want to reiterate one more time. I'll put it down in the show notes. I want to give Elizabeth Scala a shout out again and remind people that the interview that you did there, I personally thought it was a fantastic interview. And I think it'll shed a little bit of light as to the things that we've talked about today. I feel like that was kind of like part one and I have like commandeered the vehicle. And this is like a little bit deeper, a little bit more. So I'm really grateful. And everyone, come back next week. I don't know what we're going to do, but it'll be cool. So thank you again. And I hope you have a great evening, Ashley.
Thanks, you too.
Yeah, all right. Thanks for listening, guys. Happy nursing.
Here at MedRoom Chronicles, we may be uncensored, but we are not unfiltered. Protected health information has been changed and concealed to comply with HIPAA of 1996. The things we talk about are combinations of years of experience with thousands of patients, things we've read, stories we've heard. If you think we're talking about you, trust me, we're not. Also, we're real nurses here to provide accurate and helpful info, but don't take us as fact without doing your own research. Refer to your state's Board of Nursing, Practice Acts, and your institution's policies and procedures if you have questions about your practice. Lastly, our very strong opinions are ours alone and do not reflect those of our employers or educational institutions. Thanks for listening and happy nursing, guys.